It's Paul Smolin, M.D., your PEDcast host, bringing you informative and entertaining knowledge on a wide range of parenting and child health topics. You have parenting questions, he has answers. And here is your PEDcast host, Dr. Paul Smolin.
Welcome to another podcast on DocSmo.com. By day, I'm a general pediatrician, but by night, I'm a blogger. Now, if my mother knew what a blogger was, she'd be so proud. My mother actually is a subscriber to my blog. She has no idea what a blog is, but she says she loves it. Well, as always, DocSmo.com is a source of fact and opinion when it comes to pediatrics, helping parents navigate the time between their child's first peep all the way to the senior prom. For those of you who are new listeners, I need to inform you that I am probably not your child's doctor and that information and opinions expressed in this blog are not meant to be specific advice for any specific child, but rather general information about children and pediatrics. Today I thought we'd take on the issue of fever, certainly a subject that every parent needs to master. At some point, almost every child develops a fever, and parents need to be ready to recognize it, measure it, understand it, and take appropriate action. Let's get into the subject of fever by taking a little detour down Science Lane, one of my favorite streets, to learn more about fever in children. Now, fever is defined as a body temperature greater than normal. Most researchers agree that a fever is a temperature greater than 37 degrees centigrade, which translates to 100.4 Fahrenheit. Now, a child's body is able to raise his or her temperature after a complex set of events, but basically, like most things in life, this is ultimately controlled by the child's brain, the hypothalamus to be exact, your child's thermostat. It is reset to a higher-than-normal setting when your child is sick, telling your child's cells to turn up the fire. But why would it be useful to raise your child's temperature when they're sick? Well, think about it. Things happen faster at higher temperatures. Try making tea with cold water instead of hot water and see what happens. See what I mean? Just a few degrees of heat make all the difference. It speeds up processes, especially biologic processes. The healing process. Fever is both a signal that trouble has arrived and a weapon your child uses to speed up and enhance his or her defenses. Fever reducers like Tylenol and ibuprofen work mostly on the brain's thermostat to lower the body's set point temporarily. It's just like turning down the thermostat in your house. This lowering of the temperature set point can be both helpful and harmful. More on that shortly. There's a lot of confusion about the when and the how of taking a temperature in a child, so let's talk about that for a minute, shall we? Now here's one of my DocSmo pearls. If your child is not acting right at any age, take their temperature. And by not acting right, I mean unusually fussy, unusually tired, unusually sleepy, grumpy, or anything out of the ordinary. I've actually been fooled myself. I can remember when my daughter Sarah was about 2, and she wasn't acting right one day. She was crying a lot, and just her responses to things were just not normal. And, you know, I was babysitting that day, and, you know, the great pediatrician parent that I am, you know, after a few hours, I thought, could she be sick? So I touched her, and she didn't feel warm. But lo and behold, when I took her temperature, of course, I took it rectally, it was 103. And I swear I could not tell the child had a fever by touching her. She just wasn't hot on the outside, but she certainly was hot on the inside. Which brings me to another DocSmo pearl. Your child can only have one temperature at a time, and you can only find it on their insides. Let me repeat that. Your child can only have one temperature at a time, and you can only find it on their insides. By that I mean your child's real temperature is their core body temperature, the temperature on the inside, most easily measured rectally. You heard me, rectally. If you take your child's temperature simultaneously on their forehead, in their ear, under their armpit, and in their bottom, you'll probably get a different reading in every spot. Does that mean that they have four different temperatures at the same time? No! It simply means that all the surface temperatures only approximate your child's real temperature, which is the temperature on the inside. Get the point? Ooh, Doc Smo, how do I take a rectal temperature? That sounds awfully difficult and painful. Well, really, it's not. And this is a basic skill that parents need to have when they have young children, really under 3 years of age in the house. I recommend that you get one of the digital, electronic, inexpensive thermometers. These are battery-powered. They usually cost about $10. They read in numbers, not in mercury. They tweedle when they're done. They usually have some signal when you've reached the child's real temperature. And the easiest way in my mind to do this is to have your child lay on your lap, tummy towards your legs. So they're laying on your legs with their bottom hanging out. And you take this rectal thermometer with a little lubricant and you put it in maybe, you know, a quarter of an inch, far enough to get the bulb, the temperature sensing part, inside, and you wait. And you wait till it signals that it's reached its temperature, and you simply read it out. If it's 100.4 or less, it's normal. If it's 100.5 or greater, it's abnormal. Simple as that. Easy to learn to take a rectal temperature. If your child resists, in this position, it's very hard to have a problem. They can kick and scream and fuss, but the thermometer is completely under your control and it's very hard to hurt a child this way. So now you know that fever is an important thing that parents need to be able to measure, and you know how to take a rectal temperature in a young child. So let's talk about whether you need to treat fever. I told you before that fever is an important defense mechanism that helps your child protect themselves from invading germs. And since things happen faster at higher temperatures, your child, by raising his or her body temperature, is actually helping to shorten the overall duration of their illness, ridding themselves of the germs faster. It's been shown that lowering fever vigorously makes children feel better. That's common sense. But if you do this too vigorously, you actually prolong the illness. It's estimated that in a 72-hour fever-type sickness, lowering a child's temperature artificially with medicines adds about an extra 12 hours to the total duration of the child's symptoms during that illness. Doesn't sound like a lot, but it's, you know, in percentage terms, that's a fair amount. So why give fever reducers? Well, here's the reason. Number one, you want to make your child feel better. That's important. But it's especially important in the very young, pre-verbal children to get their temperature down because they can't tell you how bad they feel. And if simply lowering their body temperature makes them act much more normal, it's quite likely that they have a very benign viral kind of illness that's not serious. On the other hand, if they are given the fever reducers and their temperature either doesn't come down very much, or it comes down, but they still act very ill, that should really worry you. Maybe they have something more seriously wrong than just a benign viral illness. So in the very young children, I think it's important to use fever medicines sort of to gauge how sick they are. Well, here is a question that I frequently hear. Can fever be harmful, like our grandmothers said? Well, the answer to that is both yes and no. In grandma's time, there were a lot of children who got what was called septic disease, invasive bacterial infection that entered the child's bloodstream and caused a life-threatening illness. This type of septic illness often ended up with a brain infection called meningitis. And without treatment, most of these septic children were going to die in hours to days. Very high fevers were often part of this whole scenario. And Grandma saw this happen frequently. So she learned that really high fever was something to really fear. Well, fever is to some degree a sickness index. Often the most serious illnesses were accompanied by very high fevers, 105 or more. And many of the children that Grandma saw get sick had very high fevers and were developing meningitis, leading to seizures and potentially permanent brain injury. Hence the idea that very high fevers are very dangerous and can cause brain injury. In Grandma's era, before the great vaccines we have today were invented, Grandma made reasonable conclusions from what she experienced. In today's vaccinated children, however, a high fever is much less likely to be part of a septic illness, but rather a viral illness. So it's much less likely that a high fever is going to end up with a bad outcome, especially a brain injury, but not impossible. But remember, high fevers of any child should always be checked out by a health professional, especially if that child is very young, under 2. Okay, enough about Grandma's time. What do modern parents need to know about fever? Well, the main thing is learn how to take an accurate core body temperature, either rectally or orally, an inside-the-body temperature. Most of the time, if your child does have a fever, which is defined as an elevated core body temperature greater than 100.4, that's a good thing during a sickness. It speeds up the healing process. It accelerates the whole immune response. You do not have to use fever reducers during every fever illness. That's totally your call as a parent. Now, fever should be viewed as a warning signal, usually a signal that your child has an infection and should not be ignored. Get a pediatrician to evaluate your child if they are under 2 years of age with a fever, or if they have a very high fever, or if they act very ill, especially after being given fever reducers, or if their fever is accompanied with a rash or other localized symptoms, or, most importantly, if that little voice inside you, that little parenting voice, your instinct says, "My child's really sick. I think they're really sick." Get them checked out. And finally, I want you to remember that prevention of illness with routine vaccines are your child's best defense against serious bacterial and viral infections in childhood. Well, that's the discussion today. Thanks for tuning in to another episode of DocSmo.com. I hope you got some useful information from that discussion of fever and body temperature. Feel free to subscribe to DocSmo.com for periodic updates on health and parenting topics about kids either at my website, DocSmo.com, or on iTunes, or Facebook, or Twitter. This is your podcast host, Dr. Paul Smolin, broadcasting from you-know-where, the beautiful Studio 1E in Charlotte, North Carolina, hoping you get a thrill about knowing more about your child's next fever chill. Until next time. I want to thank the following people for help with the production of this podcast: David, Golden Voice Jaffe, for his intro voiceover. Seth Jaffe, the Rocket Man Barrister, for his inspirational guidance. Wendy Smolin, chief of our talented legal staff. Sarah, the Wizard Smolin, for her digital editing and photography. And Robert Beezer, Ben Smolin, and Jerome Moof for producing this beautiful intro and outro music you were listening to. Thanks, guys.
By listening to this PEDcast, you agree to all of the terms and conditions found at the DocSmo.com website. This DocSmo.com PEDcast is informational only. Dr. Smolin does not diagnose, treat, or offer specific medical advice for your child. For specific medical advice regarding your child, consult his or her healthcare provider.